Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Okay, so at the end of last week, U.S. President Joe Biden invited world leaders for a two-day virtual climate summit and announced the U.S. would cut emissions by up to 52% by 2030.
And it was a clear demonstration that climate is at the center of his administration's agenda. Even so, the climate pledges fell flat, with some, particularly leaders of countries most at risk from climate change. So how much work is there left to be done?
Plus, President Joe Biden this week is celebrating a huge milestone, his first 100 days in office.
Ahead of this event, the Washington Post ABC News conducted a poll which has found that 52% of Americans approve of the actions Biden has taken so far and 42% disapprove.
Yeah, I saw a graphic on this just a little bit before this conversation, and the only one whose rating was lower than other recent presidents was former President Donald Trump. But, you know, given the challenges that President Biden has faced, I mean, does this show that he's on the right track, ultimately?
Yeah, we're going to talk about this a little bit more.
Steve Oken, Senior Advisor, McLarty Associates, is on the line to help us out. Steve, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, and tell Ryan he will be fighting me for first in line to get on an airplane.
Steve, this was in reference to an earlier conversation about travel bubbles and are you fully vaccinated yet, Steve?
Tomorrow at 3 o'clock, I get my second jab.
So you'll be protected against zombies. Well done, sir. Okay, Steve, I want to talk about, because you were previously responsible for environmental and social responsibility issues for global investment firm KKR. Could you share with us your experience in sustainability and ESG? I mean, what are your thoughts on the climate summit that just happened? How far the U.S. is trying to go in terms of tackling global warming?
Well, it's great to see the U.S. back in the game. And the U.S. has been going in and out on climate and the environment. You know, we were in Kyoto, we were out of Kyoto, we were in Paris, we're out of Paris, we're back in Paris, all these international climate agreements. So it's great to see U.S. leadership back on the environment, because you're really not going to tackle, climate change unless you get governments like the United States and China putting billions and billions, if not trillions, of dollars into infrastructure, into changing the rules and regulations about what businesses need to do to comply with emissions. So a great starting off point, but boy, do we have a long way to go.
Yeah, we really do. And it kind of fell flat with some of the countries that are still asking questions, those countries which are more developing countries, about, you know, how the developed nations should offset the problems they're having. Okay, let's talk about another piece of really big news that came out over the weekend. And I think a lot of people are digging into the history to understand the significance of this. This is Joe Biden recognizing the 1915 killings of Armenians by Ottoman forces, a watershed moment for descendants of the dead from that. And he defied decades of pressure by Turkey not to recognize it as a genocide. So why has he taken this step, and how will it impact upon U.S.-Turkey relations?
Well, I think two things to see why now. One is that the Biden, Harris administration has made clear they are going to lead with values. They're going to lead with human rights when it comes to foreign policy. And you can't be saying that what's happening in Xinjiang is a genocide, but then not recognizing a genocide in other locations as well. And so that's one element. And the other element, Nisha, which you mentioned, is the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey is much different now. You know, it is much more strained. Turkey doesn't have the friends in D.C. to lobby against this recognition of the genocide. And so now, when you have a president like Joe Biden and you don't have the counterweight of Turkish allies in Washington, D.C., because of the strained relations, you get this declaration now.
All right. Another significant moment this week is U.S. President Joe Biden reaching his first 100 days in office. That happens April 29th. I remember one of the biggest challenges, of course, dealing with the pandemic, Joe Biden saying 100 million vaccine doses by his first 100 days. And then he upgraded it to 200 million. Did he achieve it? Yes, he did. On day 92 of his presidency.
Wow.
Steve, walk us through some of his achievements the past 100 days.
Well, I think that's the tough word there is achievement, because how much can you achieve you know, in 100 days as a presidency. He's had two major ones so far. One you just walked through, which is getting people vaccinated. But we're only still at the U.S. at 50%. We're not at the levels we need to be. So a long way to go. So it's an achievement, but it's not going to do enough yet until we get to where we need to be. Second, he got the stimulus package passed through the Congress, which is going to give much needed money to small businesses, to people who are unemployed, to boost up state and local governments, to help schools out. So that's a real achievement. But this is just, you know, that's kind of the easier part in the first 100 days. Now we've got the hard work to do. And so that's what you'd see is for 100 days off to a great start, but he's not going to get reelected based on what he's done on these 100 days.
Yeah, goodness, it's strange that we would even talk about re-election chances at this stage. Okay, we're going to switch tack now because we need to talk about what's been a very, very big story in the United States of America over the last year or so. Ex-police officer Derek Chauvin has been found guilty in all charges against him for the murder of George Floyd. This was a story that, you know, caught the world's attention back in 2020. President Biden said it was a giant step forward in the march toward justice in America. I have watched a lot of the videos of what was happening during that trial, Steve, and there were lots of very emotional reactions amongst people who were observing from the outside and people across the press and on television in America. Can you just tell us about how significant this is?
Well, it's extremely significant because it's really the first time you've had a police officer be convicted of murder, especially when the victim has been black. Often the investigation would never even lead to a trial. If it led to a trial, the police would be found not guilty. There were systemic rules in place in addition to the inherent systemic racism that exists in the United States that prevented this from ever happening. So it's a watershed moment, but it still has a long way to go in terms of addressing what needs to be done with the training of police, with the laws of police, with the justice system, in addition to letting, you know, black people know they can be comfortable around police, because that leads to so many other issues that we face in our country. So a very important verdict, a milestone verdict, but people can't lose sight of the fact that there's a lot more work to done and that this shouldn't take the pressure off the needed changes that need to come in the United States.
I mean, to be fair, there have been several watershed moments, you know, in the fight against racism. Over the weekend, I saw a movie called Just Mercy, and it was about the overturning of the conviction of Walter McMillan, saving him from death row. This is a long, long way to go. Can it actually be sped up? Do you think more can be achieved during President Biden's term?
Yeah, more can be achieved in terms of first, you can change laws. You can take away the qualified immunity police officers have, so that if they do something wrong, they can't say, "Well, I did it in the line of duty, therefore what I did doesn't." It means they can never be convicted or never found guilty. You can make illegal the type of chokehold that was used to kill George Floyd. So there are some things you could do legislatively. There are things that prosecutors can do in terms of taking the types of cases instead of letting them go. But then, you know, so there are things that can continue to be done to build on the momentum from this verdict. But it's going to take a lot of work in Washington, in state capitals, in every municipal police department. So this isn't going to be easy.
Yeah, that's what worries me, the time. Gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, I want to ask you a question, which is about running for California governor. Now, people forget that California is actually a huge economy.
Yeah.
California is dealing with a climate crisis. Definitely the weather that we've seen and the fires that we've seen have been a big problem for the state. But this is all happening amidst the Oscars also going on this week.
Oh, yeah. You know.
So I wanted to ask you about a reality TV star, Caitlyn Jenner, who has announced that she's filed paperwork to run for California governor. But can you just put this story in context for us about how important this is? I mean, we're no stranger to celebrities running, but just put us in the frame as to California, the importance of an election, and why, you know, this whole who's running for California governor is so important.
Well, I think California would basically be the sixth largest country in the world in terms of economy. I mean, it's a global player in and of itself, and California is having all the challenges now that the rest of the world is faced in terms of, do you lock down, do you not lock down, or do you balance the economy versus the health when it comes to COVID. But what makes California different is that it has this recall provision within its state constitution, and so that a governor in the middle of a term can be recalled if enough voters just sign a petition. And in California, it's about 1.5 million, and they've got more than that signatures to have a recall. So you recall the governor, and then you have a vote, and if Governor Newsom has more than 50% of the people who vote say they want him recalled, you then go to the second process, which is picking a new governor, and literally anybody run for governor in California, as evidenced by Caitlyn Jenner being on that ballot. You don't need any approvals. You don't need any party backing. You just say, hey, I want to run for governor. I want to be in the news. I want to, you know, sell merchandise on my website. And so that's what you get. And if you got somebody like Caitlyn Jenner as governor of California right now, it have a huge impact globally.
Well, there you go. That's just highlighting the entire issue with the system.
Yeah.
Golly. Steve Okun, Senior Advisor, McGlotty Associates. As always, we really appreciate your time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Both of you, too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.